Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Immediate wind-up mode.
In honor of our Beatles turkey show, what better turkey than When I Get Home?
You've got to be kidding me. That's an absolutely obvious attempt to get under my skin, and it's worked, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, really. But
see how I roll?
But this is supposed to be our Thanksgiving show where, you know, and picking on Beatles turkeys, the things that they messed up or others messed up for them.
Yes.
But you can't say When I Get Home.
Oh, I can, and I just did.
Yeah. Well, we know
put
that.
Put it this way. Over the course of the 30-plus shows we've done here of something about the Beatles, virtually everyone sort of stands as a thing we're thankful for. We're talking about positive things.
Yes.
So I think that the time has come where we purge negativity from ourselves at this juncture in the course of a turkey show. We can get the negativity out, and I've just done that now with When I Get Home.
No. I think you're getting confused. This is something about the Beatles. This isn't Dr. Phil. You know, it's not,
that I wouldn't
not
know
your
about.
Attempt to purge your anger and repressed feelings.
It's all psychotherapy, Richard.
Every Beatles track is a piece of psychotherapy, isn't it?
Yeah, for somebody.
Yeah. So
I'm not even going to talk about the Manson family, but go ahead.
So, anyway.
Yes. Turkeys. We have come up with a list of things, little signposts along the way, missteps, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just run down our list.
Well, an early one for me, if we're going in chronological order, I'm not sure this is the very first Beatles turkey, but I would say the 1961 Aldershot gig, where just 18 people showed up. Not their fault.
It right.
was the promoter, Sam Leach, didn't. He forgot to put the advert in.
Sam Leach is still around, right?
He is, just about, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And he apparently, you know, according to him, you know, the ad, you know, it was a mess up and the ad didn't run. So they ended up, before the gig, running around like almost like Beatle heads popping around pub doors asking if people wanted to come and see a show tonight.
Yeah. Were they the only band on the bill?
I think that night, well, it was a battle of the bands.
Okay.
It was a battle of the bands.
Who were they battling?
And it was a band from London, which isn't far from Aldershot.
Dave Clark Five.
No. One of these bands that no one's ever heard of ever since. And,
okay. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it really doesn't. But it was definitely, you know, 18 people at a Beatle gig. If you think that this is just, you know, a couple of years before, you know,
things exploded.
Yeah, things absolutely exploded. It's amazing.
Well, there's that great shot of John and George doing a foxtrot on the ballroom floor.
Well, there's also that shot, the long shot of them on stage, and you see the 18 or so people dancing. You know, and they were told to spread out.
Was it Dick Matthews that photographed that?
Yes. Yes, it was.
It took a lot of great pictures.
Yeah.
And so this is 1961. I'm wondering what we have a recording of, not of that year, but that might have been something in their set that night.
Well, I'm sure, we've got quite a lot of stuff that they
Ain't She Sweet's from that year.
Yep,
All
it
right.
is.
There you go.
Well, in fact, here's a neat segue. Another turkey has to be their Decca audition. Not all aspects of it, but they really did lay an egg there.
They did.
And I'm sure that some of the material they did at the Decca audition, they most likely performed at the Aldershot gig.
That's probably true.
See, nice link there.
Nice pivot.
Yeah.
I like that.
But the Decca audition, I mean, again, it's easy with 2020 hindsight, but it seems to me that with that, they were looking to show their versatility.
That's the conventional wisdom that's been handed down through the years,
that's
why they threw in so much novelty material
rather
than showcasing their original tunes.
Yeah.
And it's also been laid at the feet of Brian Epstein through the years, which is not accurate.
No, it's totally unfair. It was actually Brian who pushed them to put in some original compositions.
Right, the three that we have.
Right. But, I mean, again, it's all easy to judge with 2020 hindsight, but really looking back now, them doing, you know, the Sheik of Araby, I mean, is this representative of what they would be doing? Absolutely not.
No, but let's hear that, because we've never played that on the show before.
Have to be honest, I do enjoy listening to it. You know, I'm labeling this as one of their turkeys, but I loved it in, I think, was it 2012 when I saw Paul performing at Wrigley Field in Chicago. And before the gig, they had stuff going out over the PA.
Mm, that was one of the songs.
And Sheik of Araby was one of them, playing all over sort of Wrigleyville in that neighborhood of Chicago.
That sounds like a moment.
It was. It really was. I was just astounded. You know, it makes you think, my God, if they only known on New Year's Day in 1962 that, you know, 50 plus years later, this would be getting broadcast out there. You know, quite amazing.
How embarrassing. Yes.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though, is, you know, we probably aren't going to do a whole show on the Decca audition, but it is interesting to look at how many lead vocals George got on that session date. You know, you can argue about the song. I think I'd rather have it to hear than not have it at all.
Right.
But that day, he did a fine job on Bobby V's Take Good Care of My Baby.
George, as have said on a previous show, is the one who sounds the most confident of all of them.
It's like he's conscious that he doesn't have to do all the heavy lifting.
Right.
So he can just, you know, show up and be himself.
It is. I mean, we've heard Paul, as we said, you know, choke before and you know, stories of him choking. But, I mean, we've even got John there who's definitely kind of restrained.
Oh, yeah. It definitely sounds very nervous. I mean, you compare the performance of Money he did that day to the EMI one.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Memphis, you know, some of the things. He sounds all right on Hello, Little Girl.
Mm.
That's a good performance. I think that maybe hit their stride. But the whole thing was done and over in an hour.
I know.
The 15 songs.
You know, George Martin, of course, has said that, you know, it was pretty awful, but there was something in there that was interesting, as we now know, it most likely wasn't. But
yeah, well, maybe the comic bits,
yeah,
however inadvertent.
Now, later that year, actually, when they are in the studio, this is an unreleased Beatle Turkey. Well, eventually,
at the time.
At the time, it got issued eventually on Anthology, which is the Pete Best take of Love Me Do.
Yes, and it seems like about a year ago we built the show around this.
and got ourselves into hot water in certain quarters.
Certain quarters, and it just the audience went wild, one could say.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And it underscores brilliantly what a different skill set it is to play live in a club or a concert hall versus in a studio.
Yeah.
And the requisite set of a sense of dynamics
that
Ringo intuited beautifully that nobody could have known.
Yeah.
And Pete Best sadly fell short.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I mean, you know, we're going to be going down a list, but in your case, I mean, you said When I Get Home. I think you're joking a bit there.
I don't see it
as an actual turkey. It's just not one of your favorites.
Correct.
But, I mean, anything else out there that you sort of think that's fun? It's not particularly good, or, you know, I think that was a mistake on their part, but I don't have a problem with it.
You're talking about within their body of work?
Yes.
Not really. I mean, there's definitely songs that, I mean, on the whole, I'd rather have everything than not.
I agree.
I'd rather have, you know, even if it's something ridiculous like If You Got Troubles, I'd rather have that recording in hand than not have it.
Yeah.
I'm damn glad that they had the good quality control sense to not put it out.
Mm.
I mean, granted, what we're hearing is not a finished track anyway.
Right.
You know, some things are head scratchers, like Leave My Kitten Alone. You know, what kept that
you know,
under lock and key?
Yeah. I mean, If You've Got Trouble, I mean, that again was on the list of turkeys, again, not issued at the time.
Yeah.
I would call that a turkey as opposed to George's You Know What To Do, which is really just him demoing, just sort of kind of demonstrating the song.
Yeah, I don't see that
it's not fully
quite
realized.
Rising to the level of turkey because they didn't take that extra effort with it.
Right, right.
I mean, I think they knew it was pretty naff and didn't take it further, and that was that.
By the way, do you know why we come up with this term turkeys for things that, you know, a bad film, they call it a turkey?
You have a backstory?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was apparently, I don't know if it was early 20th century or late 19th century, but on Thanksgiving night, often the theatres, the main cast wouldn't be performing in productions, and they would have stand-ins and things, and those were known as the Turkey Night productions, and they were like, you know, your kind of grade B or grade Z in England, you know, version of the productions.
And the understudies.
Yeah, and so it came to be known as, like, you know, the Turkey Night performances, and eventually shortened to the turkeys.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Isn't it?
Now explain cold turkey to me.
Cornucopia of fascinating information.
So explain cold turkey to me, meaning cutting, you know, something dead stop. Full stop. What does that have to do with turkeys?
That's for another show, Robert.
Maybe it's a Turkish expression.
Cold turkey.
Yeah.
That's right. That is like going to Turkey in the winter, isn't it?
Then there's Three Dog Night among the Aborigines of Australia. We know what that means.
I think we're getting really off the Beatle track here.
We're getting international. Our scope is unlimited, Richard.
Back to the turkeys.
Yes.
Hold me tight.
Oh, yeah. We've dissected that pretty well.
Yeah, we have. And I think that definitely is a turkey. You know, looking back at their body of work, as you said, there's really very little that I would say, oh, they shouldn't have put that out. Or, you know, like you said, I'd rather have everything than be omitting things and then saying, well, why didn't they release it?
Or speculating about things that we will never, ever hear.
Right.
How great it must have been.
Right.
Like Carnival of Light.
And I do think that artistically, they almost always made the right choices. As you said, Leave My Kitten Alone, that's questionable that they didn't release that at the time. But generally, when we do hear outtakes or, you know, things that were shelved, I think they always made the right call. Hold Me Tight, in my opinion, was the wrong call. I just don't think they got that right.
They might have been a little short on material, even though that album with the Beatles is kind of cover heavy, and maybe they wanted to squeeze in one more Lennon-McCartney tune. But what I find fascinating is the fact that they attempted it during the Please Please Me sessions back in February of 63, and that apparently does not exist anymore.
Right.
I would love to feel or hear what was judged unsuccessful back then in light of what did get out.
Right, right, yeah.
I mean, they didn't even perform it on BBC.
No.
It's very interesting, isn't it?
It seems to me, looking again at the spectrum of their career, early on we can pick on some of the recordings maybe later on, when we will be getting to, you know, the turkeys, it's more their creative and business decisions.
Mm.
You know, so my next one is basically doing Magical Mystery Tour, which I love that we've got that, of course.
That's quite the leap there, Richard.
Well, it is. I've leapt over sort of, you know, the 65, 66 period
mm-hmm.
and gone to Magical Mystery Tour. And just, it was artistically the wrong decision to me.
Well, as you know, they've been sketching out that
write
film.
Write it and direct it themselves.
Yes, and I think that it wouldn't be judged a turkey. It wouldn't be on this show or on this list had Brian Epstein lived.
Right.
I think that he would have had enough control to exert over them, mm. or at least to sweet talk them into.
Yeah.
You got to have a real director. You have to have a real film crew. Mm. You have to have a real editor. Mm. You have to have a real storyboard beyond this pie chart that you've made that serves as the blueprint for the film.
Mm.
You know, it would have been fleshed into something better than it became, which was basically, you know, nonsense sketches between great musical numbers.
Yeah. I mean, it has in some ways aged okay, I think, you know, because now we're just grateful to see anything of Beatles being that we don't get new product.
Oh, yeah, that period in particular.
Yeah. So, and certainly the box set that was released, you know, the DVD Blu-ray box set mm-hmm. with all of those extras on it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's nice to have that. It was also great to have that brilliant BBC documentary.
Yes.
Which really contextualized the times.
Yeah.
And that has come closest to making sense of that film in a way nothing else has.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, not only the Britishness of it, but also the sort of precursor to Monty Python
yeah.
humor about it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, at the time it wasn't shown in America. It only like slipped out to midnight showings later.
Yeah.
But in Britain it was shown on Boxing Day in black and white.
Yeah.
For somebody's genius decision.
Yeah.
And it left people baffled and yeah. expectations had to have been so high.
Yes.
You know, the Beatles have made two great films before that. Plus this was the year of Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah.
So it's like they can do no wrong. And clearly they can do plenty of wrong.
Yeah. That's the pity, isn't it? Is that everything, you know, Revolver was a fantastic follow-up to Rubber Soul. Pepper, regardless of what your views are on it compared to Revolver, is still a fantastic follow-up to Revolver in terms of the critical, you know, acclaim.
It got the validation that Revolver didn't get.
Absolutely. And then, unfortunately, they follow up with Magical Mystery Tour, and it's like the press have finally got what they were waiting for.
Yeah, the British press.
Yeah.
In America, they'd already taken them down for the whole more popular than Jesus stuff.
Yes.
I mean, it's interesting to me that that came so close to derailing things in 1966.
Mm.
You know, it knocked them off message when it came to here they're, you know, they're ostensibly, you know, they're going on the road coinciding with the release of the Revolver album, which they nonetheless performed not a single song from.
Mm-hmm.
And all anybody wants to talk about is the more popular than Jesus stuff,
yeah.
which is off the heels of the Butcher cover session,
yes.
which blew up in their face.
Yeah.
But a year later, June of 67, when Paul is publicly outed for using LSD, you know, that's the kind of thing that in any other time previous would have just destroyed them.
Yeah.
And instead, they get past that very quickly. It probably helped that Pepper was getting all the adulation at that time,
mm-hmm.
June of 67.
Mm-hmm.
And then they quickly move on to like a week later, All You Need Is Love. So
they get away with more also, again, retrospectively, because at the time there was, you know, from 67 onwards with them all putting their signatures to, and that includes Brian, to legalization of pot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
was that a turkey?
No, I don't think so at all.
No.
But I'm just saying that
timing was everything.
In retrospect, you know, we sort of look at this stuff, at whether it's Lennon's Bedin or whatever, and even Two Virgins, and have a laugh about that. At the time, though, there was a lot of bad press and a lot of bad public reaction
mm-hmm.
to that, especially amongst obviously the parents.
Yes, sure.
Yeah.
But it didn't it didn't damage their career any
no,
the time.
No.
And it's interesting how the things that, you know, PJ Proby splits his pants in what, 66?
Yeah.
And it basically destroys him in Britain.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it happened a couple times and he had to apologize for it and all that stuff.
Mm.
Stuff that should have been a lot more career ending, stuff that had it happened in 65, such as the LSD thing, you know, such as Two Virgins or whatever, that absolutely would have ended them outright.
Yeah.
You know, things loosened up as time went by.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, had they been outed for something really heinous, if it was like, you know, a sex crime or something bad like that, that would have been a career
ender.
If Brian
had been outed.
Right.
If the stuff that was going on that precluded him from attending the Candlestick Park show, the blackmail, I mean, obviously he was in enough fear of that becoming something that he took a pass on seeing their last show, which everybody knew in their inner circle, to deal with this guy that was blackmailing him over pills and homosexuality and whatever else. So,
but I mean, if there'd been a kind of Jimmy Savile type scandal, you know, you know, stuff like that with them with underage kids or whatever, I think that could have been, you know, most likely would have been
fatal.
A career ender. However, beating up Bob Wooler wasn't, even though that caused panic.
Kind of hushed up.
Yeah.
It was very adroitly handled in a way that it didn't get legs.
But even...
And people were still rooting for them at the time.
Right. But even like Two Virgins, right, which caused, I'm sure, untold panic there amongst the ranks. The music was so damn good still that it, you know, they
if they didn't
still...
have a Hey Jude in their pocket,
right,
could they have weathered that out?
Right. Well, that's the thing, right?
And other bands couldn't.
Well, basically, if it had been like a Tiger Woods story where their performance went down in line with the scandal, you know, that would have been a whole other story. But
which is more the rule than the exception.
Yes, it is. But in their case, it's like they just kept moving on, you know, and kept putting out peerless product.
They still had the goods.
Yes.
That no matter what was going on in their personal lives, whatever missteps they were taking by design, they were unstoppable.
Now, again, when we get to like business decisions, as we've discussed again on a previous show, you know, once Epstein's out of the picture, that's when we really do start getting some problems. Now, Apple, great idea, great concept. But again, the running of it, the execution was where, you know, again, they laid a massive egg.
And it was because these guys that had been so shielded from the business to this point had nothing to do with it, other than whatever inquiries they would make about percentages or royalties and things like that. They had no idea, because Brian was so protecting them, they had no sense whatsoever what he dealt with on a daily basis. And then they decided to take it on themselves.
Well, there's an interesting, you know, comment by John in 1970 about, you know, I never had any illusion as to our ability
to
do anything other than music. Yeah. You know, once Brian died, I thought we've effing had it.
But they'd been burned by the time those words left his mouth.
Well, exactly. So it's like, well, then why did you do it? Well, maybe because he was on acid and, you know, and junk and
I'm sure that wanting to keep up with Paul's ambitions probably had a part in it as well.
Yeah,
Paul was the one that was the most gung ho.
Yeah,
from day one, which I'm taking back to 1967 at least. You know, I mean, even the name was his idea, and he was sketching out things during Brian's lifetime for the future business.
Yeah,
but it only didn't start to take shape till the end of 67.
Yeah,
you know, with the boutique initially.
Yes,
and then you know, signing people to the Apple publishing. You know, Jackie Lomax being among them before he was even really considered to be recording his own stuff. They wanted him as a songwriter.
I mean, it was, you know, like all these things. I think they had fantastic ideas. I think Apple was a wonderful idea. But it would have been way better if placed in the hands of people who could execute it properly, with them overlooking. Obviously, you still need the Beatles' creative input.
Yes.
But in terms of...
infrastructure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where they needed a Brian or other people.
And,
like
you know, again, you can't beat them up too badly because the precedent wasn't there.
Absolutely.
What artists were running their own record labels and this whole brand.
Mm.
I mean, everything aesthetic and artistic about their decisions were spot on.
Yes.
You know, from the Magritte-inspired Apple and the record label itself.
Yeah.
And they certainly had an eye and an ear for talent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't deny the talents of a Mary Hopkin or Ivy's or James Taylor, you know, modern jazz quartet, you know, all these talents that were signed to the label. Even the novelty stuff was this, at least worth a listen.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't producing crap, at least during the Beatles' lifetime. You know, you can question a David Peel much later on, but that was a whole different animal.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, okay, we want to have our own studio. We'll get someone in to, you know, put that together for us. But they get Magic Alex.
Yeah.
I mean,
major turkey.
A horrible, horrible decision.
Okay, we should point out there are
that's like an
libel
acid
laws, so yeah, I mean, tread lightly here.
But that's kind of like, you know, an acid-drenched decision.
Well, you know, don't underestimate the power of a box of blinking lights.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, Magic Alex's Nothing Box, wasn't it?
The most successful thing he ever produced.
Yeah, it was Random Lights that kept John amused for days on end when he was tripping.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, trying to guess which color will show next.
Well, you know, you weigh that against a 72-track studio or invisible baffle walls around Ringo's drum kit. I think I'd take the light box, too.
Now, as I took a leap, as you pointed out, over the sort of 65-66 period.
Mm-hmm.
You've done, obviously, a lot of research for that, you know, your
Revolver
book.
Some people
regard
Help as a turkey.
Oh, no, I don't agree.
No. And
it's not up to the standard, maybe, in terms of the writing.
Well, it's different, though.
Of A Hard Day's Night, but...
So. I would make the argument that it's not a lesser film. It's just a different film.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, it's certainly parroting the James Bond stuff going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sort of the... What?
I do agree, though, with John's assessment that they were almost like guest stars in their own movie. There are whole sections there where they're not in it, and it's the flashy camera work and, you know, the direction that's holding it all together and not relying enough on them.
I think it's ironic that he said that because, apart from Ringo, who's sort of the centerpiece of the film, John comes off better than any of them.
Yeah,
he's got all the best lines.
Yeah.
He's got the best songs.
Yeah, but then you have to say in that case, then he's being honest. It's not just self-interest. He's in it, you know, more than the others or whatever.
If he had actually sat down and rewatched it as a 30-year-old, I wonder if his assessment would still be the same and not marked by the hindsight, you know, all that negativity that he was heaping upon the Beatles' career at that point.
Yeah, but I watched Help just a few weeks ago again, and loved it, thoroughly enjoyed it, of course,
too.
You know, beginning to end. However, and it wasn't looking for this because John had said it, but I did get that feeling. There were sections of the film there where I just felt there should have been more Beatles in it. There was too much of the other character actors.
Well,
and I understand they're trying
to
make a film here. You know, they're trying to make a professional film, and they're making a professional film, and so you have a cast and you have a storyline, but I do get that. I did feel at times like there's not enough of them leading this film.
Well, I don't agree with that necessarily because I think they were right where they needed to be. What I would say is that it seemed like George was a lot more diminished in this movie.
Yep.
And the lines he gets are throwaway lines, mostly concerning money.
Yes.
You know, playing into that stereotype of him.
Yeah.
And I didn't appreciate that too much. Even Paul had more to do in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's too bad that his part couldn't have been all it was. But yeah, I have no problem with Victor Spinetti's whole, you know,
Whole Algernon and
it's funny as hell. And as well as Leo McKern.
Yeah.
Great villain. And John Bluthal, who plays his little right-hand guy.
Fantastic.
And Eleanor Braun.
Yeah, and all the other characters. Warren Mitchell, who just died this week, who plays Abdul outside, the Cockney Abdul outside the Indian restaurant.
Yeah.
And he went on, actually, very shortly afterwards, to become a household name in Britain in the TV show Till Death Us Do Part, which was the origination for
All in the Family.
Absolutely.
Right. So, and then there is Patrick Cargill.
Patrick Cargill. The other Cockney Indian outside the restaurant is a guy called Alfie Bass, very well-known character actor in England.
Mm-hmm.
So it's full of people like that.
Yeah, and so
they're all superb.
The contextualization, because I think a lot of that would be lost on American audiences.
Mm.
But to me, it's like one more element that made that film what must have been such a joy to see it in theaters in 1965, as you did twice.
Yeah.
And it just, once you have... You know, understand you have that annotation going on.
Yeah,
it really is a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and to me, it holds up. I mean, my kids are not averse to black and white, but they absolutely love A Hard Day's Night or Help.
Yeah,
probably a little bit more than A Hard Day's Night. I think it's more understandable.
Yeah,
and it just visually just very popping.
Mm.
I don't think it's an embarrassment.
I have to say, you know, reviewing it, doing it as a film review, I would definitely give A Hard Day's Night higher marks as a movie than Help, but that doesn't diminish my enjoyment of Help.
Yeah. A Hard Day's Night is so singular as an achievement. I mean, so groundbreaking as, you know, in the line of jukebox musicals, as they were called.
Yeah.
It was so utterly innovative, and people were taking their cues for decades to come from what's in that film.
Anyway, this is supposed to be turkeys. You said that some people think that Help's a turkey, so we've just
From the very year. Okay, here's a turkey that you probably still think is a turkey. Beetle cartoons.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Mitch. Mitchell Axelrod will have me in his crosshairs for this.
Yeah, you're giving him sads right now.
I know. But yeah, I agree. That to me, again, it's not really a whole lot to do with the Beatles themselves.
But it's fun.
Oh,
I would make the case that there's a generation of Beatle fans
all.
In America that learned to read watching Beatle cartoons from the sing-alongs.
Yeah. And that's what Mitch said, you know, for him as a kid, you know, it played a big part in his life, and I understand that in all seriousness. I get
that. It explains a lot.
It certainly does. But, you know, I think in Britain, it was a whole different perspective on it. And
well, it didn't get shown at the time. That was like decades later you guys got to see it.
But I think it wasn't shown for a good reason. I really just don't think it would have gone down that well. I really don't. It was, you know,
the Beatles themselves learned to love it in time. You know, George's line was, "It was so bad, it was good."
Yeah, but that echoes,
Ringo, who had
that
every
echoes
reason in the
world John's line about Klein. Anyone with a reputation that bad can't be that bad.
Well, except he could be that bad, and he could go to jail to.
Well, and
that.
I think the cartoon was that bad. You know, it was
bad in terms of the whole spectrum of art and animation.
Well, lack of art. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's artless in its way, but. It also, there's something about it. Maybe it's just if you live through that time, and it was being run on television in America well past the point of production, like through 1969 or something like that. Because I have very early memories of seeing it and being aware that it existed. And, you know, it's like in 1969, they're still showing Ticket to Ride and I Want to Hold Your Hand, stuff like that. But when you see some of the later animations they did, like to the more groundbreaking Beatles stuff, like the Strawberry Fields clip, or Tomorrow Never Knows. It's really pretty cool. And had it not been part of this assembly line, you know, factory produced animation of the time, you know, they actually had some artistic thought into what they were doing. It could have been something. You know, I mean, Yellow Submarine was obviously the extension of what Brodax's people could do when tasked with something, you know, more lasting and not ephemeral.
But I mean, and you know, a huge problem also with that cartoon for me is what happens also in Yellow Submarine, although the, you know, the visuals there are so good that you can live with it, which are what Paul later referred to as those stupid bloody voices.
What are we doing out here in the middle of the Egyptian desert?
With the sun baking down on our noggins and the sand in our teeth.
Yeah, what are we doing here? Will somebody answer me?
Do you forget, fellas? We're here because a sheik asked us to entertain his harem of beautiful girls.
That's the answer. Yeah.
Oh, this is Paul, you know.
This is George.
Yeah, ring up. Oh,
God, hate that stuff. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, that's a definite turkey.
On your side of the pond, I think there's a lot of Americans that regard it very warmly.
Yeah,
Mitch's
check is in the mail to you.
Yeah,
yeah. So,
Beetletoons, great book.
Yeah,
That I agree. I echo that one. Beetletoons, give it the bell.
The best book on the Beatle cartoons out there.
The only book on the Beatles cartoons.
You had to go there.
The
turkeys.
65-66 period that you researched so thoroughly for your Revolver book.
I did.
Anything in there that we haven't mentioned that you would say, again, a turkey, not in terms of, you know, we've all got taste, you know, differs, but bad decision or, you know, really laying an egg.
I would say, and I understand the decision making in 1966 going on the road with the limitations. Who was it said that Beatles quit touring 15 minutes too soon? Somebody said
that. Nice quote, that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that they had these limitations, that the fact that touring was such a grind on them, so soul-sucking, they, you know, they were just going through the motions clearly. But had they played something live from the Revolver album, one of the guitar-based songs, and done it halfway well, I mean, the most recent thing they toured with was Paperback Writer.
Yeah.
And that's a complex song to begin with.
Yes.
Probably not the best choice other than it was the most recent single, so they kind of had to do it.
Yeah.
But had they done a guitar-based song off Revolver, I think that would have done a lot to show that they were taking halfway seriously the presentation of their art.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think people thought in those terms of, oh, we've got a new record out other than the singles. Let's play an album track.
Mm.
I mean, they did play George's If I Needed Someone, which was from Rubber Soul in Britain. And maybe that was just because he'd moved past the rockabilly of Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby.
Mm.
And before that, in 64, he was singing Roll Over Beethoven. So why not give him an original sing? I mean, could he have done I Need You on stage?
Mm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Think for Yourself? Probably not.
No, he could have done I Like You Too Much.
That somebody have to be playing piano on that.
Well, John.
Yeah, but would he want to?
With his elbows.
Yeah, exactly. That would turn it into something completely different.
But Don't Bother Me.
Don't Bother Me would have been a cool rocking song.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Beatle bands I've seen through the years all play that song, and it's a great song to play.
Yeah.
So that would have been an interesting choice. You have that little vignette of it in A Hard Day's Night during a dance club scene.
Yes.
Yeah, I think fans would have reacted well to that.
Right. Right. So, jumping forward, again, a business-related turkey, to me, is bringing in Alan Klein.
A fatal turkey.
Yeah, it's a divisive turkey.
A killer turkey.
Yes.
A toxic turkey.
Toxic turkey.
Yes. I mean, what is there to say? I mean, we've talked about this before. You know, he was absolutely a dividing kind of guy. And, you know, people say, well, what interest did he have in, you know, driving a wedge between Paul and the other Beatles?
Yeah.
Well, I can think of maybe having three acts to manage instead of one, for starters.
Right.
And George, right out of the box, having this massive hit.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, how could you go wrong? You knew John was going to come up with the goods, and Ringo coming up with the goods would be a nice bonus.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you know, what's clear in this show really so far is, you know, we're really kind of struggling to come up with a strong list of Beatle turkeys. There really aren't that many.
There's not
certainly
that many.
When it comes to the music, there's virtually none. You
right.
know, just one
and you
or
can
two.
Sort of forgive them because yeah. you recognize that precedents hadn't been set. The template wasn't in place. You know, they were writing the roadmap as yeah. things unfolded.
Yeah.
And had that been different, then maybe they could have avoided some of the things. But every band that followed learned something from their mistakes.
Right. Now, I think, therefore, being that, you know, this is Turkey Week, that means it compels me to have to say for the rest of the show, we should focus on Paul McCartney's solo turkeys.
Nice try.
There are lots of those.
Nice try.
In fact, it's one big fat turkey.
Yeah, okay. So,
oh, just blanking.
I'm not even going to take that bait.
Really?
Yeah, that's insane.
It's a way more valid and larger stuffed turkey than When I Get Home.
I'm quite happy doing some time. We can do a John versus Paul. I mean, we kind of have in the past anyway. But if you want to talk turkey solo careers, that would be a great
but,
show.
But in all seriousness, it does flip the switch, doesn't it? I mean, really, once you go post Beatles, if we were doing a show on solo turkeys for all four of them. My God, that would take up several shows.
It would take up a lot of time if you're going to run down every single questionable release. Although I would make the case that if you judge their solo output within their particular universe and not within rock generally.
Bip-bop, bip-bop.
I'm not. You won't get me to defend that.
Mary had a
not even for the sake of argument will I defend that. I won't even go there.
Spies like us.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody to spy like us.
I think that a lot of the work, even Ringo's, holds up to a point. You know, Ringo's got his turkeys where the formula wears thin.
Well, what about he starts with, I mean, Sentimental Journey?
I think that was it was groundbreaking in its own way. It was original. He set a,
so is an earthquake.
He set a template that got followed by everybody, including Paul, through the years. Is it my favorite album of his? No, not really. But I like the concept. It's conceptual art, if you will. Does he have the voice for it? Maybe not so much. Although I would also point out that...
Definitely not so much.
You know, big band stuff is deceptively difficult. It's not for your average rock singer, even people that have tried it in the rock school. I didn't think Rod Stewart did particular justice to a lot of those 40 standards.
No, I agree with
you. And nobody would ever say he doesn't have the chops. It's a different sensibility.
Yeah, but does Ringo have the chops really?
I wouldn't say he does, not even for a lot of rock stuff. He absolutely does for country.
Yeah.
And Bukus of Booze.
Bukus.
Bukus of Booze.
There you go.
That'll be the title of his autobiography. I think that proves that given the right setting with his skill set, he can absolutely shine with the best of them.
Mm.
But
well,
anyway,
well,
I don't want to go too far afield into the solo stuff.
I
that
know,
is
but I just
thing.
Wanted to dip in there. You
yeah,
know,
I know.
So, but it is, but that is the truth of it. I don't think that's, you know, obviously the fat people who are major fans of Paul's solo career, and that's fair enough, and George and John and Ringo. But there's no doubt about the fact that there's a hell of a lot more opportunity to drum up turkeys in the solo careers than
and there absolutely is.
Yeah,
it was the anniversary of Spies Like Us the other day.
Yeah, but I mean, what it illustrates is just how incredible they were when they were together. That really, you know,
the best quality control in the world.
Yeah,
with fantastic. George Martin. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
not a misstep.
I mean, George Martin, you know, has often said, you know, including to me about the White Album,
that he loves saying that
he still feels that it should have been a single album. I absolutely disagree.
I don't think there's any Beatle fans out there that would say, I'd rather not have this dozen or 15 Beatle songs. You can keep them.
Yeah.
Lock them up.
Yeah.
It's asinine.
I mean, you even like Wild Honey Pie, which I suppose some people would say, you know, discard it. But that goes to show with Beatles, mm-hmm. is that if you don't release something, then everyone's going to be moaning, why didn't you put it out?
Well, right. You know, someday we will hear Carnival of Light.
Yeah.
And if it's as bad as it's been described by Lewis and other people who have heard it, fair enough, but it is still a snapshot of the Beatles in January 1967,
yeah.
you know, at the height of their psychedelia dabbling.
Yeah.
You know, why the hell not? I would get something of import out of it, no matter how much I might not want to listen to it over and over again.
Right.
You know, I'd rather have Mary Jane than not,
mm-hmm.
but it's not my go-to track for anything.
Not at all.
I avoid it.
I mean, I wouldn't call that a turkey. So I don't know what I'd describe that
What's
as,
worse but... than a turkey?
A turkey turd? Turkey dropping?
Mm, okay.
There you go.
Yeah, I was thinking Cornish hen, but okay.
Oh wow! Okay.
The lesser. So, I think we've covered enough ground for this holiday week.
Mm.
So why don't we close out with a string of Beatle recordings that some people, not necessarily us, might perceive as missteps.
Yeah.
Turkeys, if you will.
A kind of turkey mashup.
Yeah. Clear the decks.
You can do the turkey trot to the turkey beetle mashup.
Yeah. At the Thanksgiving table as you listen to the show.
Because, don't forget, every day is a Beatles Day, and every Thanksgiving Day is a Beatles Day.
In Istanbul, every day is a turkey day.
My name is Richard Buskin.
I'm Robert Rodriguez.
And this has been...
Something.
About...
The...
Thanksgiving
Beatles.
It feels so right, so hold me tight. Tell me I'm the only one, and then I might never be the lonely one. So hold me tight tonight. It's Mr.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will he still be sending me a Valentine?
Number 9. Number 9. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Something About the Beatles, recorded at Strad Studios, produced by Thomas Repetny. Executive producer, Rick Way. Title song recorded by the Corgis.
The regular season is heating up. New stars are emerging, and that means more opportunities to win up to 25 times your cash on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection on a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. Let it fly to turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Watch your favorite players and get paid doing it this basketball season. See your entries make progress during the game or make new entries for the second half and the fourth quarter. Three-pointers, assists, rebounds, and everything in between are yours for the taking. Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit of up to $100. Just download the Prize Picks app and use code GET100. That's code GET100 on Prize Picks for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.